Okay, well, welcome everybody. These are our every other week PLC calls. They're very informal, and we tend to talk about what's happening and of course, what's happening is soon we're waiting for the RFA that EPA will be putting out, and we'll be talking about that today. We're also concerned about the coronavirus and any other issues that come along, and we're talking a lot about pre-preparation since the RFA is not out, things that take a lot of time to get your act together before you respond. So when you do respond, you'll kind of have your ducks in a row. So we always get started with news from Washington, except I would like to announce today is National Hot Dog Day. And in celebration, I'm from Chicago originally, so I had my annual hot dog for lunch today, and I'll tell you, it was really good. It wasn't exactly a Chicago dog, but I didn't have the pickles and the marinara. I don't know if many of you had those Chicago dogs, but they're really good. But anyway, if you have a chance tonight, then grab yourself a hot dog. That's my plug for Chicago dogs. So with that, we're going to go right into news from Washington. And Heather, do you want to tell us what the latest news is?
Absolutely, absolutely. So, news from Washington. So I reached out to HQ this week, and again, you know, it's kind of the same story that we've been hearing for a while, and this happens. You know, this is kind of to be expected, which is, you know, that RFA, that request for applications, that's the new name for the request for proposals. It's a little bit different this year, but very similar. That request for applications is looming on the horizons. It's coming soon, but it's not quite here yet. But one thing that Channing did want to share with everybody is just be sure to, you know, sign up for that Brownfields listserv. You know, that way you'll be notified once that RFA comes out. And it does kind of have a really long URL to sign up for that Brownfields listserv. So what I'll encourage you guys to do is just check out the PLC notes. We'll make sure that we send out the link to sign up for the Brownfields listserv. And we'll send that out on the PLC notes, and that way you guys can get access to that. And don't worry, we will also push out on our listservs as well the second that we see that RFA goes out and goes live, so we can make sure that you guys hear from as many avenues as you possibly can, just to make sure that everybody knows. Now, if you don't get the PLC notes, or maybe are worried that you're not on one of our listservs, go ahead and send us an email, and we'll make sure that we get you on it. You can just send me an email at hkballou@eicc.edu. And just ask me to put on the listserv. We actually have two different ones that we keep. One of them is just the main one. It's the big one. Usually most of the emails come from me. And that's kind of our bigger one. And that's where you'll get a lot of, you know, sort of general information requests or kind of more broad information. And there's a separate listserv that we keep. That's the PLC listserv. And that's where you'll actually mainly just get emails from Mike. That's where he kind of sends out his special PLC notes. He sends that out every Friday after the PLC. And I'll tell you what, he puts a lot of effort into those notes, and it's a lot more information than what we just talk about in the 30 minutes or so that we're on the phone here. So I really encourage you guys, if you're interested, if you're on one listserv and not on the other, just send me an email. We'll make sure we get you on both because there's value to being on both of them. Again, that's hkballou@eicc.edu. And keep an eye out on the notes. We'll make sure that we have a link to get you guys onto that Brownfields listserv. Again, that's Brownfields from the EPA listserv, to make sure that we get you guys some of that information. So that's the news from HQ. On the HMTRI side of the world, our biggest thing that we are very excited about is the upcoming virtual all-grantee meeting. So on that note, our virtual all-grantee meeting will be held this year. It will be August 11th through the 13th, and it will be held 12 o'clock to 3 p.m. Eastern. And we're going to be holding that via Zoom, and we're really excited and looking forward to that one. So for those of you who haven't already done so, please go ahead and start registering for this virtual meeting. To do that, you just go to brownfields-toolbox.org/2020-all-grantee-registration. Again, that's brownfields-toolbox.org/2020-all-grantee-registration. And once again, that link will also be coming to you via the listserv. And in fact, it was sent out in the PLC reminders that were sent out yesterday and today. And it'll also be going out to you in the notes and all those different ways. And just keep an eye out. We'll keep pushing those. But if you haven't registered yet, please take a moment to do so. That's very important to us as we kind of look at how many folks are coming in and where folks are going at in terms of different breakout rooms and things like that as well. So that's really important to us. And thank you to those who have already registered. So at this point, I'm actually going to turn it over to Steve, and he'll talk to you guys a little bit more on the information about the actual day.
All right. Thanks, Heather. And I want to begin by thanking everyone who has volunteered to be a co-facilitator. We've had a really, really good response, and we're going to have some fantastic facilitators in each breakout session. If you still would like to volunteer, you can let us know. My email address is sfenton, F-E-N-T-O-N, 103@AOL.com. So I think I still have a few more that I'm waiting on to hear from, but it looks fantastic, so thank you for that response. Also, we requested videos of your project and or facility, just short video to kind of showcase what you're doing and how you're doing it, and we've gotten a number of those too, some really, really good ones. We could still use more, so if you have any existing ones, or you could make one without a lot of effort or putting anybody in jeopardy, that would be fantastic too. And also the student experiences, or you might refer to them as testimonials, we've gotten a number of those. We want to thank everybody who's sent those in. They're fantastic. And again, we could also use more of those. So if you have any interviews that you've done with students that talk about their experiences with your project and program, and you would like to share them with us, that would be fantastic too. So we always need more. And then lastly, as Heather said, please register as soon as you can. And one thing to keep in mind is when you register, you'll have breakout sessions to sign up for. And I would just encourage you to look at those carefully, because you'll be registering not only for the conference, but you'll also be signing up for those individual breakout rooms. And it'll be a little more programmatic this year if you sign up for one that you really didn't want to go into, and on the day of you say, gee, I really wanted to sign up for a different breakout session. It's not like when you're face-to-face and you can just walk next door to the other one. This one will require a little, you know, technical magic to make that happen. So if you can look at those carefully and sign up for the ones you really want to attend, we want to try and minimize, you know, the movement of people as much as possible. But the sessions are looking fantastic. The speakers look great. And now we're just working on the technical aspects of it. And I will be back in touch with any of you who have volunteered to be a co-facilitator and kind of run through what that might look like and how the day should shape up. But we have a fantastic group of folks that are going to speak and also be facilitators, so it's great. So with that, I'll turn it back to Mike.
Great. Thanks, Steve and Heather. Of course, if you have any questions, you could always send anything to Heather. You could send anything regarding the meeting to Heather or Steve, or if you have any general comments about the PLC or just something that you have a question about or comment or couldn't get a hold of the other people, just hit return on your notes that we send out on Friday, and we'll get your inquiry to the right person. We did have some inquiries regarding and we'll be talking about COVID-19 and the disruptions and the way these things have changed. And the question is, you know, we're going to be changing things. We're going to be changing class size, and we might be dropping some courses. We might be maybe even adding some courses, and what do we need to do with relationship to our grant? And of course, the answer there is you really need to keep in close contact with the original coordinator. And any questions you might have, any things that have changed from your work plan, you might want to get in touch with your regional coordinator. And I don't like to put regional coordinators on the line, but we have one. And would you agree with this? What should our grantees do if there are any changes or they have questions? What would you suggest? Okay. I'm trying to pull out our regional coordinator that's online. Well, we're suggesting that you contact your regional coordinator, and they all have projects assigned to them, and tell them that you're changing your plan, your work plan, what you should do, what you may want to do in terms of adjusting work plans, or even if just to keep them informed. And your first point of contact, of course, is your regional coordinator. And we include those names in the session notes. As far as the PLC news goes, this is our last of this cycle. We do cycles of 10. And because we thought that the RFA would be out several weeks ago, we extended the 10 to 13. And normally what we do in these PLCs is every 2 weeks, biweekly, we talk about a topic, whether it's a when we're not near an RFA, we talk about what different grantees are doing and how they're doing and different strategies. When we're near an RFA, as we are now, we start talking about strategies and how you may want to respond to that RFA when it comes up. So lately we've been talking about those long-term things like partnerships, developing partnerships that takes a long time. Today we're going to be talking about curriculum. We talk about those things, and as we get closer to after the RFA is issued, we'll talk more specifically about those ranking criteria and things you may want to do to respond to those. Those are fairly similar to last year's, but they may change a little bit, so we don't want to get too deep in the weeds in terms of specifics on the requirements for the AFA until we see what the RFA says exactly. But we're talking about those things that take a lot of time now, like curriculum and partnership development, that you should really get started on now before the RFA, because often it takes even more than 2 months to develop those things. So while this is the end of this cycle, we're starting a brand new cycle. That'll be on August 5th. That'll be the Wednesday before the annual all-grantee meeting. And perhaps, fortunately, we're hoping that the RFA will be out by then, and we'll be focusing on that, and we'll continue these discussions. It'll be a PLC like we've always done. We use conference call. We've been using this for decades, basically, and it has served us pretty well. Everyone's going to be going to Zoom. We're not sure if we're going to continue with Zoom or not. Certainly on the 5th, we're going to use the traditional conference call mode that we're doing now, where you could phone in from anywhere, anytime. We may consider Zoom, and we'd like your opinion. We may send out a survey after the all-grantee meeting to see if you like Zoom or if it's something we may want to stick with the old tried and true conference call. It does have its issues when we keep open mics, and sometimes we have some phone issues and that, but we'll see how it goes. So we're going to continue and start a brand new cycle on the 5th of August, pretty much like the other one, same time, same place, same call-ins, and focusing on this cycle primarily on the RFA and, of course, addressing COVID-19 as we go. I'd like to spend a little time, as we've been doing for the last several sessions, of what is the state of environmental workforce development job training as of July 22nd. Where are we? Where are we? Are we starting in classes? Are we being able to get into the buildings? Are we able to do some recruitment? And can some of you give us an idea of where you're at right now?
How are you
doing?
Can,
this
Mike.
Is Ronnie.
This is
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Go ahead, Ronnie.
Go ahead, Ronnie.
Okay. Yeah, this is Ronique from West End Neighborhood House in Wilmington, Delaware. So I mentioned before in our last call, I had pushed it back from the spring cohort. We had 20 people, so due to physical distancing, we split the cohort up. I'm going to start on the 27th, and we condensed it. Traditionally, I have a 5-week cohort, and we condensed it to 4 weeks. So that first portion is traditionally workforce readiness, and we're going to do only 4 weeks now instead of the 5 weeks. we'll have that cohort on the 27th and on the 21st. We're only going to have 10 people in that cohort, and then we'll have another one in September 7th and that'll end on October 2nd. I've just been in contact, just keeping those guys engaged and you know, who have been involved. Recruiting has, you know, hasn't been that bad. It really, you know, kind of like kind of dealing with a good problem because I have people that are interested, but I have to, you know, push them back probably more so to the fall because I already have my 10 for this summer pandemic cohort that we're trying to run right now. But I'm, you know, trying to get the applications in and putting those people, those individuals on file. I did an initial assessment. We do assessments here, you know, how we can better provide services, supportive services to everyone who does apply to the program. So we're going to do actually a post-pandemic assessment with one of our case managers here on site. So everyone who does come in on that first day, you know, we'll give them a second assessment. You know, a lot of individuals have probably had issues with depression, even losing jobs, not being able to get a job, family members dying. Some of them might even had COVID in the beginning. So we're going to reassess these individuals and see how we can support them throughout their 4 weeks here. And in our program, doing the retention piece, when we're trying to find them job placement, we always invite them back. We still got to be strategic just in regards to that. We have hours between 2 to 4 after they do complete the program where they'll have time to come in and we'll help them, you know, with just job placement and looking on things on Indeed and on the Internet and things of that nature. But, you know, we're going to start Monday. That'll be our first day. We actually will start forklift training on that day. It'll be a busy day, so they'll do forklift training. They'll do their reassessments and introductions to the program as well, too. So
looking
forward to doing that.
Okay. Someone else?
This is Janet Curley from Chesapeake Community College.
Hey, Janet.
Hello. Can people hear me?
Yes.
Okay. We have been, in our contract training, we've been doing training with people. And the largest class I've had during the last few months has been 24 people. But we have to go by what our governor says we're allowed to do. And we've also taken our training to outside context rather than doing them inside classrooms. So I'm looking at how we can adapt our training to doing that if this continues and taking into account the weather.
Interesting. Now you're doing some online, correct?
Well,
or is it all
we have developed the training that I'm talking about that I've done 4 weeks ago, we did face-to-face training with 24 people. And then we monitored for COVID, and we had COVID practices in the classroom, and we've had no cases of COVID or symptoms since then in the 4 weeks since then. So we think we did something right. But, you know, everybody's transitioning to online, and, for example, we've also, for the Department of Energy Weatherization Program, put out an online COVID training class that about over 2,000 people have taken, and we're getting feedback from people as to what's working. So, you know, we're all adapting. I still don't know. What I would ask you, Mike, is normally they want us to train 70 people in the, you know, per grant. That becomes a real problem if we get limited to 10 people per grant. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. Well, this comes into what I was saying originally. There are going to be change in work plans, and EPA does totally understand this. And I think this is a time when it's important to touch base with your regional coordinators. And they understand your situation. You might indicate we're going to need to be reducing our class size, and we'd like to work with you and keep you informed on what we think we can do and what we can't do. The thing about our job training programs is people don't have computers. They don't. They may have phones that are changing a lot. They can't use tablets. They don't have internet. So we have a few programs that have been doing online and are set up for that, but we have many that aren't. I'd say the majority don't. So I would like to, we do have open mics, so these mics are very sensitive, so you might have some of, you might have to put us on silence if you're talking.
I appreciate it.
Okay. I'm going to remind everyone we've got open mics. So just if you've got people in the room, we're going to pick your conversation up. So if you have to leave the room or put us on silence, that would be appreciated. We'd like to keep the open mics so we can keep the discussion going. So anyway, keep in touch with your regional coordinator and let them know what you're doing. And, of course, quarterly reports will be coming up, and you'll also want to record your progress in that. So I think that's a reminder. I expect the expectations are going to be changing, and certainly work plans will be changing. For those of you who are going to be applying for new grants in the next month or so, we may have to remember the next will be training under the new grant, the FY21 grant, about a year from now. So there is a chance that this will be history, but there is also a chance it may not be history. So it's something that you're going to have to play into your, and we'll talk about this later, you play this into your proposal. So anyone else where you're at right now? Going to give everyone a chance to see if they could share their experiences right now.
Daddy, are you listening?
Okay.
Does it sound like anybody else?
Well, that's
it
fine.
It doesn't sound like anyone else has.
I hope they didn't put us on hold. this could be a very good argument for going to Zoom. Someone puts us on hold in there. Get their music. So.
I don't know who that is.
Instead of putting us on. Silence, they probably put us on hold. So hopefully, whatever they're doing, it's going to work. Give it a second. Can anyone hear me?
Capturing my.
Clearly.
Okay.
Hang up the call and start over.
Oh, that's an idea. That's a very good idea. Why don't we hang up and then call back in.
That way we don't.
Very nice. Thank you. Okay, talk to you.
Something
going on here. It might be something technical with the conference. back and see what happens. And if not, what we'll do is, oh, there. Can anyone hear me? Is anyone there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Please don't put us on hold. Please don't even want to silence us. It was good music. I mean, there's... we may have answered our question about whether we go to Zoom or not. This has happened about, out of 235 calls, that's happened about three times. So it's not really unusual. Well, let's move on to curriculum anyway. And when we talk about curriculum, what we want to do is work backwards. And we may be continuing this on the next call, but the last PLC, we talked about partnerships that set up, take a long time to establish your partnerships. Part of those partnerships across your employers, and when I say work backwards, when you write this grant, you're going to have all your ducks in place. You're going to want to have your contractors in place. You're going to have your partners in place. Hopefully you'll have some employers that are willing to write you a letter of recommendation that they would like to look at your graduates for consideration. You want to have your curriculum in line. And when I say work backwards, of course, this is a job training program. So what we do is we say, what is the demand here? And we, several PLCs ago, we talked about assessment, labor market assessment. And what that is essentially finding out where are the jobs in your community, who's willing to hire. And there's two types of assessment. The ones that people sometimes use to respond to the RFA are some things that you could find, statistics you could find in the future of environmental jobs. And that. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about people who will hire. The companies in your area, whether it's a tank manufacturer, whether it's a recycle operation, whether it's a consultant, whether it's a manpower firm, you want to get names and organizations and them to tell you, I will look at your graduates, that we see that we could use someone who's got 19, 10, 120, we can, or use someone who has got confined space or someone who's got asbestos. We can use those people. And if you have a program that are going to give me people with those certs, that it may have up to $5,000 worth of certifications, I'll take a look at them. It's not going to cost me anything, and I'm going to look at those people. And if conditions are right, I'll hire them. And, of course, ideally, you're going to want to use that in your grant to add to your appendix. Now, this all takes a while, but what you don't want to do, you don't want to build it and they will come, because they may not. Particularly in this time now. If you're in a old community, there may be a lot of work in asbestos. There may be a lot of deconstruction work, and lead goes with asbestos. That begins to tell you something. If you're in a new community like I am, in Raleigh, in North Carolina, there aren't a lot of houses with asbestos. Now, unless there's something else, like a railroad or some refineries, somewhere where there's a lot of heavy-duty asbestos, and that is an alternative entry into that, that's one thing. But they have a different set. This is why they give you choices, and we don't have a cookie-cutter grant. It's really what's relevant to your area. So, again, what you have to do before we talk about curriculum is you have to talk about the prime employers in your area. And those prime employers may be city government. They might be some very large companies. They may be a lab. They may be a very large firm. It may be a prison. Who knows what it is? It might be highway construction work. It may be something like a Bechtel or someone who's building refineries. So you need to find that out, and you need to find out where they could use people, entry-level people, and anyone who may need someone with a certification. It might be a shipping company, might be a recycling company. That's what you have to find out first. Once you find out that you've got a shot at placing your graduates, now you go to the next level down. So you want to, again, besides placement, they want you to retain your students. You want 70, 80%, maybe 100% retention. If you find that you can place all your graduates, you can usually keep your retention rates very high because they know that there's a job at the end of the training. But what you have to do is you have to align what your employers are saying. they're saying, well, they need a certain level of expertise with certain intellectual background or training. You've got to be able to recruit to that level. So in other words, you do not want to have a class of people who aren't capable to get those jobs. And so this comes into the retention part. You have to match your class that you're going to be recruiting, and you may have to adjust that to match the jobs that your employers say, I need people. If everyone needs someone that, say, is going to be doing asbestos work, and you're not going to be recruiting a class of people and who really aren't suited physically for that work. Or it might be intellectually. You may need something that, an employer that needs some advanced training, and your people aren't people that with advanced training or education, so you have to suit that. And you may have to adjust. You may go down to, rather than graduating people with lots of credentials, you may be doing people that are, say, flaggers, or they may be working off highways where they're doing, or they may be working with urban gardens, that again, you're going to have the interests of the people lined up with the interests of the employers, so you don't lose them halfway through when they realize they can't do the coursework that you're going to have to give them, or they just aren't interested in that type of job. So that's again, we're working backwards now. The third thing you do as we work backwards, say you've got a bunch of courses, you have to make sure there's EPA support that's going to support those courses. For example, you are in an area where all air pollution is all the rage. You've got some radon. You've got a major air pollution contractor that works all over the world, and he says, I'll hire everybody that you could train in air monitoring. Oh, you can't do that right now. Now, we have to wait till the RFA comes out. The RFA specifies in there which programs are supporting EPA training under Environmental Workforce Development Job Training, and there's about six or seven of them. The majority of the money comes from hazardous materials, solid waste, over $3 million. So the majority, we can put our courses to fit in hazardous materials and solid waste, but we can't. Air pollution is just too far off. So the question is, you can't really, as much as you'd like to, and place people in air pollution. If they're not supporting this program, they're not going to be able to fund that. Now, it doesn't mean you can't train it. You're just going to have to find other funds to train your air pollution courses. For example, you may get a grant from a company that says, I'm an air pollution contractor. I need all the people I can get. I like the idea you're giving them 1910-120 and you're giving them confined space and you're giving OSHA 10 or OSHA 30, whatever. I'll support air pollution training, and that's great. So, but you can't expect to get those monies out of the EPA grant. So, as again, we're working backwards. We're narrowing this down. Finally, you're going to have to, once you say, okay, I've got these courses, I've got a demand for my students, I know the students are going to be interested. They fit to the demographics of my recruiting class that I'd like to target, and EPA will support them. Next one, can you find an instructor who's certified if they need to be certified? Are they willing to train? Can they fit your schedule? And this is where and why we're talking about this now before the RFA even comes out. You need to start lining up your contractors, your vendors, unless you're going to train everything in-house. You're going to have to line up your vendors, and with the contingency that you get the money and you get the grant, and you could do three bids, and you could bring them on board per procurement practices, send out a bid for the courses you're thinking of training, and can you do that and per our schedule and per the fact that we get this grant? And then once you bring them on board and qualify them as consultants and vendors, now you have the instructor. So we've lined it up all the way from the back. You've got the demand in the very back end. You've got the interest of the people, the target group, that fits. EPA will support that. and we'll find out exactly what they'll support, pretty much what they'll supported last year, but we'll get the final numbers on that, and primarily around things that could fit into the arena of solid waste hazardous materials. And you've got an instructor lined up. Now you're really ready to write your grant, and you could use the qualifications of your instructor because he's already on board. He's been qualified, he's vetted, he's qualified, and he's got the instructor. You've got the demand, and you've got MOUs from your employers that are willing to hire him. And so now you know who you have to go after. So opposite, counterintuitive to everything we think of, you recruit and then you train. No, you work backwards, and your final step, the last thing you do is now start screening, and then you start recruiting, and those people are going to be the ones that best fit everything you've already established. So you're essentially, as I said, you're working backwards. And that's, if you have the time and the luxury of time, which some of you have on the new grant, this is the way to go about it, because it's going to guarantee that you're going to place your students at the end of the course. It's also going to guarantee that they're going to stick with the program and that EPA is going to fund it. So as far as those core training courses, and you know, everyone has to teach 1910-120, the 40-hour HAZWOPR. Most of the grantees are teaching either 10 or 30-hour OSHA. OSHA courses, one thing about the EPA program is they fund those things that they're most interested, like solid waste or integrated pest control, or might be enhanced health and safety, some in wastewater. We'll be talking about that later. Emergency response. They'll fund those programs, but they'll also fund the OSHA courses that relate to those. In other words, you cannot teach someone to go out into a site that has hazardous materials without 1910-120. The reason, while OSHA 10 and 30 are construction courses, they have health and safety in there that's really integral to doing all of the other things. At that point, we start switching off on core curriculum depending on your labor market assessment. You may be going in older communities towards asbestos and lead. And of course, if you're doing asbestos and lead, you might want to be doing confined space. So you could get into those areas where you've got asbestos and lead. You might be doing some OSHA training. We call these, they're not necessarily your heavy core curriculum, but they're these ancillary certifications like heat stress. If you're working with asbestos, you may want to have a, and these could be state OSHA certs, or they might be some sort of, as you go through the different grants, so the grantees will get several national certifications and then several state certifications, and it might be heat stress, or it might be something to do with fall protection, scaffolding, whatever is local. It might be forklift training. Of course, if you're working with any kind of deconstruction in your area, or if you're working with lead or asbestos, you might be working with forklift. First aid and CPR is one of those ancillary important courses that you could fill in with, because it's one of those things that everyone needs in order to perform on these national courses. And in the notes, we'll put some examples of what people do. There's some areas that we're going to be talking about later that are more have gained a lot more interest, and that's the bloodborne pathogens, biohazard disposal, and chemical safety and awareness. And I'm not sure how that will be written into this RFA, but I expect they may have something in there that would address COVID-19, even though it may not be quite as big an issue a year from now when you make for the new grantees that are just submitting new grants. It certainly affects those who are current grantees, and I think some of the current grantees are actually developing new courses in biohazard disposal, bloodborne pathogens, chemical safety, and biosafety awareness, because that's where disinfection, because that's where the jobs are right now. So that's something to consider. So there is really a whole realm of courses that you could be providing. Some key ones, you want a couple of the key ones that set the tone, the HAZWOPR, the OSHA 10 or OSHA 30, whether you decide to go the asbestos route or you go some sort of remediation route or mold, or you may be going into some sort of a water, stormwater, and we're going to have to find out how they're going to support that. So you've got your basic, and then you've got a lot of ancillary courses that will, like forklift training, that will support those courses. And then, of course, you're going to have your non-supported courses. As I said, you may have a situation where people want to train in air or radiation or one of the we don't know they won't be in the RFA, but if they're not, you can get other support, some partnership and leverage support to train those classes. And of course, one thing about the EPA program is it is an EPA program and they don't support the life skills, things like financial management, report writing, remedial education, anger management, all of those things that you need to leverage. Those you have to find other organizations who will do it in kind, and often they will. That's part of this partnership development we were talking about in the last couple of sessions. You need to go there, or you need to find some outside funds to, or another organization you could partner that where they could get some of those. The resume development, it has to do with placement, so you could mold those courses into being necessary to place your students so that they would go under that. You might be doing videotapes, for example, of your graduates so that you could show them to potential employers. Obviously, it's hard to get a job without a resume or a video of some sort. So when we're looking at curriculum, you could look and see what other people have done, and we usually do in these sessions. We'll feature a particular person and every particular grant, and everyone does something a little different. But you really have to go by your own local situation and where you can place people and match that up with what EPA will support, and then match that up with your trainers that you could get, and do all of this now. Or as soon as the RFA comes out, you could really hone it down now, because anything that goes in the area of solid waste, and almost everything goes in the area of solid waste, you can be hard pressed to find something that's not. Now, clearly, air is not in solid waste, and some of the water programs are not clearly solid waste, but many of the programs you may wish to train would fall into that major category, and EPA is very lenient in making sure, okay, that could be funded out of hazardous materials and solid waste. So it's not as big an issue as you might think, but it's just something you have to be mindful of. So we're going to get more into this as after the grant comes out and we go into specifics and talking about the ranking criteria when it talks about curriculum. But does anyone have any ideas or questions regarding curriculum development and what you're thinking of doing in curriculum development?
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, Ronnie speaking. Yep. So during our first week at the workforce readiness, I totally agree. We have something similar in our curriculum. We actually just had to revise it a little bit. But we're really big on creating a community. So success I had with my last cohort, creating a community, getting individuals comfortable with being with each other, being with myself, and doing that by creating a good rapport with them, I was able to redirect and even confront them when I needed to, basically. Simple things like icebreakers in the curriculum we're going to cover, strength and qualities, have some team building exercises. Every day we do a daily check-in. And with that being said, we do a daily check-in. We always go over what motivated you to get up in this morning. That's one day. Another day we go over, if you could change one thing in your life, what would it be? And this is a way to engage them outside what we're doing right now, like in regards of the EPA, or regards of what tests they may be taking. It just it makes you more familiar with them, and they get to learn me, and I get to learn, the class. So The icebreaker, I'm trying to be creative. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I really like the learning circles where you have, particularly where you have diversity. You may have ex-offenders. You may have seniors who haven't been to a class in a long time, and you've got people who are just there. Everyone sits, and you can social distance and do this. You just sit around in a circle and shoot the breeze. What's the problem right now? Well, I can't get here because of the bus. They shut down the bus lines, you know, or I'm struggling because my family needs some money and I've got to do something. And this is all part of this program and certainly is funded. This is all part of it. It really fits under that whole area of retention.
Yeah.
If a student has a problem and he's got a problem at home, then he's got a problem learning, and it's a shame to get through everything he's gone through to get into this program and then have to drop out because of something that can be resolved by either by the group. You know, you could get into a circle and says, someone says, I can't get here. I can't, there's no way.
Yes.
I used to be able to, but they changed the bus route. Well, okay, I could pick you up. You know, where do you live? We'll pick you up, you know.
And that's the most important thing, I think, you know, before we even admit them, just doing how important an assessment is. And once you create that community, the importance of the community, and having them being able to, you know, having them be able to let their guard down. You know, we all have problems. We all have life issues. And during this whole COVID-19, during this pandemic, you know, like, I mentioned to this multiple times before, like, I don't use the term social distancing. You have to be more social. You know, you have to talk. You have to get people to get their guard down, to get people to open up, you know, and value the opportunity that they have. And I had people in my last cohort, ages ranging from 20 all the way to 52. And, you know, during those 5 weeks together, you know, they had potlucks. They had potlucks for lunch. Some people will bring in different foods, and they, you know, for lunch, instead of going out in the community and ordering things, they made foods together. And now, but the things we put in place for them, you know, like those learning circles, like doing the daily check-ins every day, listening to their peers, what their responses was to the daily check-ins. We also do a daily check-out. What did you take away from today's lesson? And during the course of the day, I would refuse for someone to tell me nothing. If you tell me nothing, like, it's got to be something that you heard today. Because if that's the case, you're repeating the same problems that you did before you got here. You have to be a different person when you leave the program. You got to be. It's something that you heard today. You know, so it's one thing we always say, you got to stay focused. You know, I have an athletic background. You know, I same thing my coaches tell us. Well, you got to be laser focused. And those things I use to a lot of our students. You got to be laser focused. You got to lock in. If you have problems or issues locking in, let's discuss that. During that 3 weeks when we have our outside contractor come in, we have individuals that were struggling to study for tests. So this go around, we put in a study skills period. You know, at least once a day between 1 and 2 p.m., teaching them how to take notes, and that's in the curriculum. You know, we also have respect criticism. We have personal change. Some things we got out of a life skills book curriculum we bought off of Amazon. We also resume building. We have that at least once, along with digital literacy with our career specialists. Control excuses and hot buttons. You know, goal mapping. You know, communication skills. So those are some of the things that we have in our curriculum. You know, we just finished it up, and we actually created some items for they have a booklet. So we keep this booklet, and they go through the curriculum, all of our handouts that they have during the course of that 1 week. So after that first week of the workforce readiness portion, we actually give those to the individual so they can take and refer back to the things that they learned for that first week.
That's right, and it's amazing what that'll do for retention, because someone thinks they're going to be dropping out, and they got a friend in there, and they're not going to let them drop out. They're going to keep them into the program. not only that, is once one of them gets a job and they say, are there any more like you? Yeah, mm-hmm. I got some buddies that I went to school with, and they're going to do right by you. And it just pays dividends the whole way. So you're right. It's a lot of this has to do with social. It's no different than when we went to high school and or to college, and we keep in touch with their old buddies, and that's a key thing. But as this curriculum goes, again, try to work backwards. It is counterintuitive, but if you know that there's a place for your guys, and it's more problematic now because businesses are really down. But the question to ask some of those employers is, a year from now, your graduates, some of you will be graduating students early, but for those who are just applying or just starting, your graduates will be looking, hopefully, when we're past some of this, and they may be looking for people. So if you can work backwards, find out where the economic activity is in your community. Don't overlook municipal jobs and state jobs and jobs in the mayor's office when you develop that. But don't come up with a curriculum that's either too hard for the group that you're recruiting, or there are no jobs. And that's kind of, you know, if you're an old community and there's a lot of deconstruction going on, deconstruction or mold. If you're in an area where there's no mold or there's no asbestos or lead, there's a lot of other courses you could be teaching. So we're going to be discussing this more and talking about it more. Anything else someone would like to bring up? Okay. I have to apologize for that great music we heard earlier, but that was, thank you for that idea, which we just rebooted the whole activity, so that worked out well. We'll send the notes out on Friday, and the next time we'll get to meet will be on the 5th of August, a week before our all-grantee meeting. So in the meantime, if you have any comments, just send them on in to Heather or to just return the notes or to Steve. Okay. Well, with that, we'll just say goodbye for this week. And hopefully those of you who are celebrating National Hot Dog Day, have a good one this evening. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Take care.
Good job.
Thank you.